the first time I tried programming, I really had a mental block with it and had a hard time getting in with it. And then my eureka moment was just realizing this is just a logic puzzle. I love logic puzzles. And from that moment, I've really been enjoying it. Again, if you want a career in science and you want to be a researcher, everything comes back to a computer. Everything I do is with a computer. I'm not an experimentalist. I'm a theorist and a data analyst. So I spend my life in a computer, but I've had to pick it up in a way that you're using it as applications all the time and you're not explicitly taught it.
You're listening to What the Tech, a podcast powered by the Computer Science Department of UCalgary, here to deconstruct complex computer science concepts bit by bit and explain what the tech is going on. My name is Paolo.
My name is Lynn.
Today, we talk to Emma Talson, a network neuroscientist and new assistant professor in the Computer Science Department at UCalgary. Her research focuses on investigating the organizational principles of brain networks. In this episode, we cover all different applications of network science and how understanding these principles can help us fix major world problems. Without further ado, please welcome our guest, Emma Talson.
Welcome to the show, Emma.
Hello, thank you. It's very nice to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
So why don't you just go ahead and kind of tell us who you are, what you're currently doing, where you are too, and your plans kind of in the future, as well as just a quick overview of like what your current position is and what you're working on.
Sure. I'm Emma. I'm going to be starting as an assistant professor in the Department of Computer Science at Calgary. I'm really excited about it, and it also feels a little bit crazy, but in a way that really fits my life. I've not even visited Calgary. I've not been able to because of everything with the pandemic. Just before I was about to fly out for my interview, we had to cancel about 2 days before because everything went into lockdown and the border got closed. So I'm stuck here in Boston in a weird coronavirus-induced stasis where I've kind of not really been sure whether I'm at Northeastern University, that's the position I'm leaving, or Calgary, but it's shifting more to Calgary in the mind. But yes, I'm still stuck here in Boston and probably will be for the rest of the year.
So you're right now you're a professor at Northeast.
No, now I'm at Calgary in Boston.
Oh.
I was an associate research scientist, which is just another way of saying a senior postdoc at the Center for Complex Network Research at Northeastern University.
Okay, I see. Okay, thank you for clarifying that. Cool. Why don't you kind of tell us how you got started in computer science? Like, what was kind of your first interaction with the computer, if you can recall?
This is really funny because this is going to be my first venture to really being in a computer science department.
Right.
I've come on a journey through. I did my degree in maths and physics at the University of Warwick in the UK, and then I did my PhD at Cambridge in the UK, and I was in the physics department, but I was working on network science related concepts applied to neuroscientific data sets. And then I came to Northeastern and working on network science and again, network neuroscience in particular. So this is the first time I'm going to be particularly belonging to a computer science department. And you asked me my first interaction with a computer. And really I'm going to take that to mean programming. So a serious interaction, you know, like not just like a little Word document or. So it was about in my second year of a physics degree, it suddenly becomes apparent that, you know, if you want to have a career in science, period, you need to know your way around programming at least and a little bit of computer science. Right. And this was a little bit of a shock to me. The first time I tried programming, I really had a mental block with it and had a hard time getting in with it. And then my eureka moment was just realizing this is just a logic puzzle. I love logic puzzles.
Okay.
And from that moment, I've really been enjoying it. And again, if you want a career in science and you want to be a researcher, everything comes back to a computer. Everything I do is with a computer. I'm not an experimentalist. I'm a theorist and a data analyst. So I spend my life in a computer. So that is kind of a form of computer science, but I've had to pick it up in a way that you're using it as applications all the time and you're not explicitly taught it. So I've been teaching myself all the way through the beginning of my undergrad degree. And now I find myself here where my work belongs to a lot of disciplines and no disciplines at the same time. And computer science is one of the best fits for this kind of work.
Yeah,
that's awesome. So, you know, you mentioned your background is in physics. I'm curious, aside from the computer science, like how did you know you wanted to go down that route initially of kind of like wanting to study physics?
Sure. This is a tricky question for me to answer just because I haven't ever imagined my life without physics and maths. It's always been there. Like everything from being a child and standing in the back garden with my dad and watching eclipses in the middle of the night and looking for meteor showers. I have a lot of fond memories of this from a child, and again, doing lots of logic puzzles. And at every decision point in my life, so in England, those things are like, what would you like to do for your GCSEs? This is when you're like between 14 and 16, and then your A-levels, 16 to 18. It's always been a choice of going this way or that way, and it's always been really obvious to me. Of course I'm going to do maths. Of course I'm going to do physics. I love these things.
And so these are ways of like sectioning out, like whether you go into math and science or like kind of languages kind of thing, like an arts stream?
And I really like these things too. I love writing, and this is why I feel like at this point in my life everything's coming together at last, because you go down a stream where you're focusing just on these scientific parts, but then when you're coming into research, it's bringing all these other things back in again. I write all the time. I get really creative with the ways we approach things. A lot of the visualizations I do is bringing in all the arty stuff again, which I kind of had to say goodbye to, or at least leave as a hobby from when I was younger, and now it's all coming back together and you can kind of be a whole person again. It's really nice.
Yeah, that's awesome. So you're in your master's, leading into your neuroscience research. What are the like big milestone events that kind of just like secure that like passion for networks and neuroscience? Because I would assume that it doesn't all come kind of, isn't all easy at first.
Sure. And not even just not easy, but I wasn't exposed to a lot of it. Network science is a really young discipline. Only really came about in the turn of the century. And so there haven't really been many courses and many programs for it. Some of the first, at Northeastern where I'm working now, this is the first PhD program in the world that's offering network science. So when I did my degree, these things were not there. But I told you I did a joint degree between maths and physics because I couldn't decide which one I liked better. Turns out the answer is physics. At the time, I found myself really drawn to the intersection where I was really enjoying applied maths and theoretical physics. So I was kind of dancing in this middle part. And part of this middle part is complex system science. And this is very much a physics concept in a physics course. So you learn nonlinear dynamics. And again, it's bringing in some of that creative stuff. I used to love drawing phase portraits. So you solve dynamical systems and plot different trajectories as... It was some of the favorite parts of my degree. So knowing I was drawn to that area, I thought I'd better try and do a research project in this one summer. That was a really busy summer. I managed to go to South Africa as well, either side of it, to do some teaching in Johannesburg and then do this research project in the middle. And I just kind of looked online at the professors at Warwick, and I came across someone, Sandra Chapman, and I was just immediately, you are my hero now. She had already won Young Scientist medals for her research. She was a professor before the age of 40. That's a big deal, at least there. And she'd also got a scholarship to go to Antarctica with her husband as an artist, not a scientist, to draw the iceberg.
Oh, wow.
That's
super cool. So I thought, okay, I would like to talk to you. And I asked her if we could do a research project. And I had in my mind that it would be dynamical systems in some fashion. And she told me that she was doing a project on the brain. Would I be interested in that? I'm like, okay, it hadn't really occurred to me before because I'm heavy in the physics world. But this sounds interesting. And of course, when you're trying to think what your career and your whole life is going to be, you're going to need to pick something that you can't solve. The brain's perfect.
Yeah,
got to make a choice. Yeah, there you go.
So I started this project with her and I ended up working on stock markets. She said that they had some MEG data that one of her postdocs was working on, but it's very challenging data to get used to. There's a lot of pre-processing steps. And for someone who was only just getting into programming at the time, she gave me what should have been an easier data set to just get used to things.
Right.
She gave me something on the stock markets, which was second by second trading data for the S&P 500 companies. And I'm not sure I'd call it easier looking back on it.
Yeah, that's very interesting.
When you've got a spreadsheet that's 2 gigabytes, it doesn't really behave in the same way that it's.
Yeah, 100%.
It turned out that I started to find some really interesting things in this data set. We calculated mutual information between the way different companies were trading, ordered them by entropy, and then when you plot this over time, you could see that when one company did some trading action, it would then spur lots of trading from other companies, and you could kind of see these waves coming down a matrix. It was really neat.
Oh, wow. So, okay, interesting.
So I never actually ended up working on the brain that time, but I was exposed to everyone who did. I spoke a lot with the postdoc, and she took me to meetings at Cambridge, and that's where I met Ed Bulmore. I just remember this moment where we're sat in a room, and Sandra's a physicist, and she's actually a solar plasma physicist. And then there's Ed Bulmore, who's a psychiatrist and neuroscientist. There was also someone who worked in business because of the stock market side of things.
Right.
And I'm like, wow, everyone is contributing ideas from their own discipline to completely different systems. And we're ending up with these really cool projects and really cool results. Business borrowing from physics and neuroscience borrowing from the same things. And we're starting to see the same kind of behavior in the brain and stock markets. That's a bit weird.
Who would have thought, right?
Exactly. So this got me really excited, A, about interdisciplinary research, because I just loved what was going on there, and then about networks, because you're seeing these universal patterns between the two.
Yeah. Obviously, Emma, you've done a fantastic job of kind of like applying yourself into these kind of different scenarios to kind of see these bridges, right? For someone that maybe solely in the computer science department, how would you maybe go out and encourage them to go out and seek those kinds of things? Because clearly your experience has brought phenomenal moments of just like, oh crap, like this applies into here and this applies into here and all that stuff, right? So how do you go out and how do you tell like an undergrad student first year, maybe even before first year, how do you tell them to go out and just kind of do as much, go as far as your heart desires?
That's such a wonderful question. It's a wonderful question. I'm not sure I have the absolute answer to it, but the thing I keep finding myself wanting to say during all of that is put yourself in different situations. You have to keep exposing yourself to these different things. And that's when you will think that, oh, something that happened over here, this does have a pattern, a connection to what I'm experiencing over here. You can't possibly ever see these connections between different worlds, say computer science, business, you yourself in these different worlds. So I think just going out there and trying things is really the first thing I would say here. You have to put yourself in these situations and feel them and experience them and talk to people and see the way that they see it, because it can be really surprising. It's been really fascinating and sometimes challenging when you work with, if I'm based in physics and then trying to talk to a neuroscientist, one key word I want to bring up just because it's relevant to my research, control. This means such different things in these different communities, in biology, right, neuroscience, engineering, physics, and it's very, very loaded. people have a really strong attachment to what these words mean, so it can cause a lot of misunderstanding and potential conflict, but it's also an opportunity to turn it on its head and see the way other people see these words.
Yeah, no, that's really interesting. And that's a curious question, actually, now that you mention it. Like, for you, what does that mean, having dipped your feet in all of these various fields, to you? Like, well, what does control mean?
Yeah, I try and exist in a space that doesn't really belong to any discipline. Like, so I really like the word transdisciplinary rather than interdisciplinary. Okay. It might sound really pedantic, but interdisciplinary to me means you're in between disciplines. And I'm saying, no, there's a space that is not in between anything. It's just, you know, for me, I'm seeking to understand the brain. And that requires concepts from many different disciplines. It doesn't mean that I'm sitting in between things. I'm trying to weave together many ideas from many different things. So the answer to your question is it depends what hat I have on, who I'm talking to. And when I'm writing, I try to avoid all of these things, because if you use these loaded terms, then you're going to, somebody reading it is going to put it in some bracket. So yeah. You need to be very, very careful. And I try to be sensitive to all of them. So control can be about how an organism controls its own behavior, controls its limbs and its body, or it could be the mathematical engineering concepts of, is it possible to move it into any potential configuration? It's, you need to keep all of these hats on, and depending who you're talking to.
Yeah, 100%. That's awesome. So when you kind of introduce yourself, you generally say network neuroscience. Is that network neuroscience. So that also is in itself a pretty loaded term. Mm-hmm. See, what does that mean? Like,
I don't think there's a real need to complicate it. Network neuroscience just is the application of ideas, methodologies, tool sets to understanding neuroscientific data. And this is going to cover a huge range of things. For me, I spend most of my time in literal neuronal networks, so neurons connected by synapses to create a network that would then describe the brain. I also look at, say, large-scale functional networks. So this would be, if you think about the human brain, and if you have an fMRI scan, you parcellate the brain into several hundred regions, and if activities correlate, there's a connection, so you can come up with a network that describes the activity in the human brain at rest or during tasks. And so you create these networks, and they also exist all the way down to the way molecules interact in cells and the way cells connect together, circuits, neural circuits. And then your brain is part of the body. You're an organism that's interacting with your environment. There's networks at all of these levels. And I think network neuroscience is then applying the tools of network science to understand something about these networks, something about their structure, something about their function.
Wow. Yeah, that's great. That's yeah. Super great.
You know, we noticed on your website, you kind of, which you kind of also mentioned in that brief description there, this investigating topology and organizational principles. So that's just kind of what you're mentioning there, of kind of analyzing different parts of the brain and seeing what correlations there are, I'm assuming.
Yeah, right? Exactly. So like one of the things I did in some of my early PhD work was looking at the rich club structure. And this is cool in that it's been shown to be present in the human brain, macaque, ferret, worm is where I'm going, mouse. And you know you're onto something when you're finding the same kind of structure in many, many different organisms and right. Many different types of network. Like I tried to allude a minute ago to, there are many different types of network in the brain and many different scales you can look at. But we seem to see this over again in different types of network and functional networks and structural networks. But anyway, a little bit about what that structure is. In a network, a node is called a hub node if it has many, many connections. So if it has a very high degree compared to the degree of other nodes, the number of connections they have. And then if these sets of very high degree nodes, if they are densely interconnected with each other, more so than expected by chance, then we say there's a rich club structure. And it's kind of a term shamelessly borrowed from social science. If you think of politicians or yeah. Seem to know each other, be very cliquey, celebrities.
Yeah, rich club, yeah.
Okay, Okay, the bourgeoisie club of neurons.
exactly. So there's these super rich, super important hub neurons in the brain, and they seem to be very densely interconnected. And when you're thinking of this in the context of the brain, it might look a little bit weird because this is costly. A biological network, you might think, you know, you need to optimize for not having to expend too much energy to build and to maintain such a network. Mm-hmm. So you would hypothesize that there is a reason that there's so much spent on all of this wiring. So the one I found in the worm is, it's just like this little 1 millimeter worm that has 302 neurons, and they're kind of laid out along its body with a big clump in the head and a big clump and a smaller big clump in the tail. And the rich club exists between the head and the tail, so there's some very long range connections here, and we would assume there's a reason for this. So when we look at the rest of the structure of the network, you know, we're interested in things like information transfer. The whole point of the brain is presumably at least in part information processing. So when we have a look at paths and their lengths and how you would travel from one part of the network to another, everything seems to traverse the rich club. And what this then does in turn is it might be costly to have this big set, but then the payoff is that it's a very efficient network, is very quick, is very easy to get from one part to another because everything can just go through the rich club. And it's also thought that it helps maintain integration and segregation in the brain. These are things that you need both of them, an amount of local segregation, but also the ability to globally integrate. And the rich club seems to do a really neat job of this, of having little local areas of the network which are then connected through the rich club.
Wow,
that's crazy. I love the worm kind of analogy there.
We love the worm.
Yeah, we love the worm. Yeah, we love the worm. And
wait,
and,
you know, I have a burning question. Is the rich club or the bourgeoisie club of neurons responsible for my craving for cake? That's a French Revolution joke. Thank you. I'll be here all night. Anyways, Paula, you were saying.
Kind of related to that question. I'm curious, like, how does that apply to, let's say, like human? Like, are there any kind of major examples of this whole rich club connection in humans? And what are those kind of connections responsible for?
Absolutely. So it does exist in human. It's been shown to exist in structural and functional data. Okay. And I think it's really important to distinguish between the two because they're just so wildly different. It's true, there are literal connections, and functional, it just means activity is correlated. It's shown that there is a rich club in humans. It's very spatially spread out. Again, it covers a lot of different physical locations within the brain, so front and back. The regions seem to be involved in more higher executive processing, more higher order cognition. The hub nodes of the brain do seem to correlate with this. There's also been evidence in terms of enrichment for particular genes in these nodes, just to show that these genes are associated with higher level cognition. So that's kind of cool. And something else that I think is interesting is it's been looked a little bit of how the rich club then changes with disease or disorder. And it looks like these hub nodes are some of the most targeted by disease. I mean, in the brain networks of people who have, say, schizophrenia is a great example. You find that these hub nodes have their connectivity profiles really altered in schizophrenia, and the rich club structure is slightly damaged.
Interesting. Moving, I guess, from a biological, let's say, focused application here. I'm curious, you know, you're kind of going into the University of Calgary and under the computer science department, where are you hoping to kind of take your knowledge and on networks, and how are you hoping to apply it within the computer science department?
I have so many ideas.
All right, well, we got time.
Yeah, I'm going to have to find a way to manage my time and energy here. But I'm hoping to I'm hoping to collaborate with a lot of people. And some of it will be with the Hotchkiss Brain Institute. I'm really excited to work with them and carry on a lot of these neuroscience ideas. I'm really keen to work with people in the computer science department and then find links with people across the rest of the university. And I guess just to reset at the beginning of what I aim to do with a research program in the first place, I want to reconnect with the things that really matter. It's what's wonderful about working in this kind of area is you can feel like your research will have an impact on the world. And that's one thing that can really draw you to, say, network science, as opposed to some really deep area of physics. I was actually in the condensed matter department at Cambridge, so it can sometimes feel a bit removed from reality. Mm-hmm. So I really want to reconnect with the mental health aspect. So some of the control stuff that I've been talking about, this is kind of coming down to the way the brain controls itself, and it must control itself in some way to operate healthily. You need to be able to process signals from your environment, make a decision, perform an action. And in some brain disorders and diseases, so say depression or Parkinson's, some of these control functions appear to be disrupted. Mm-hmm. So if we have this mathematical framework, we could then start asking, how do I return this function? How do I restore it by changing the network structure? And this is where I really hope to collaborate with people at the Hotchkiss to, say, identify areas of the brain that we could stimulate through transcranial magnetic stimulation, TMS, and potentially alter the network structure and treat kind of mental health especially, but also disorders like Parkinson's are really relevant to this framework.
And does TMS have to do with computer science? Sorry. Or is it just totally like brain?
No, it's very neuroscience, but the methodology, okay. The methodologies to identify which regions we should be targeting, that's where the computer science lies. Because we're gonna have a lot of difficult problems to solve and a big space to explore. And this is really where the computer science aspects are going to come in. So like, for example, one thing I'm keen to do in C. elegans is really neat because it's so small. We can model it on a neuronal level and a whole brain level, which is just inconceivable for the human brain. And I'm hoping to explore many different network configurations. So there's a huge computer science bent here to be able to simulate the dynamics of the whole brain and explore the space of different behaviors and different possibilities. If we start to change the network structure, what can it still do? What can't it do anymore? And see if we can explain things about behavioral repertoires.
Cool. Mm. Wow.
Yeah. A lot of really great stuff there. You know, the applications seem to just be endless. I was hoping to kind of ask earlier, like, why do you think people should even study neuroscience or get into like networks? And it seems like, you know, there's this general theme of just like so many different applications, and like there's that piece that you mentioned of you can make an actual impact on the world, which I think is really awesome. Is there any kind of other pieces that are missing, I guess, from like just the value of studying neuroscience or going into studying networks?
Absolutely. I mean, like, there's a lot of points being covered there. And yeah, we have been talking a little bit about why I think it has big impacts and why it's... Why it matters to me on a personal level as well as a scientific level, because you want to go and make a difference in the world. I think I'd also add that with network science, it's such a common language. That's why it's been so successful in my mind, or part of why it's been so successful. It's creating a framework, and this framework is, you know, it's part maths, it's part computer science, it's part visualization, and these things all come together to provide a way to look at any system. If you then pair it with something very system specific, and for me that's neuroscience, that's my domain specific knowledge, but you could apply this to any other network that you care about. You guys care about accounting, you can go back to my stock markets.
Yeah.
And you can take this, that you can take this same framework and you can learn something about it and you can make an active change. You know, people use it to analyze dynamics in your workplace and see if it's effective. If you, you can create social networks by asking, who do you trust? Who do you talk to? And then this will expose whether your company is operating in a healthy way or an unhealthy way. It's a very direct, quick way to understand the world around you. And it applies to pretty much any system.
I love it. We've talked about a lot of really great stuff. Is there any other kind of major topics that you, you know, you want to cover?
I feel like there's a couple of big elephants in the room on this, and I would love to actually just address them head on. One of them being this, you know, this little pandemic that's got us all stuck here.
Yeah,
there's a pandemic? Oh, I didn't notice.
And the other one being that, you know, the world's kind of on fire or underwater, seems to oscillate between all of these things. It's certainly on my mind a lot. Mm. So the climate change one in particular. Yeah, I want to talk a little bit about, I joined an initiative of a bit more than a year ago. Oh, no, time flies, maybe 2 years ago, called Homeward Bound. And there, it's a leadership program for women in science with an aim of building a network of 1,000 women scientists that will be trained in leadership qualities to be able to act for the collective of the planet and make decisions that will benefit our future. Mm-hmm. And I took it on a year of training of this, and we went to Antarctica last December as part of the largest women expedition there, which was really cool. And we're starting to think about how to bring some of these learnings into the world. And I'm really excited about pairing these with complex systems and computer science, because the problem with climate change, I'm sure and hope you agree, is we have all the science, we know what's happening, we see it, we've known it for decades. The problem is a social problem. Mm-hmm. It's social networks and getting everyone to act the same way. And it's the only thing that kind of gives me hope here, that if individuals can align all of their actions in one direction, then we can have a lot of power and actually do something to change this. And this is a social network problem and social complex systems.
Mm.
Yeah, and I could see how that even parallels with the whole COVID thing as well, right? Like this whole like wearing a mask thing, right? Like it's like some people are wearing them, some people aren't, right? So it's like how you align everyone to wear a mask. Just stay home, just calm down, all good. Just gotta.
Exactly. Right. And like there's a couple of things. It's like by wearing a mask, what you're really doing is you're breaking the contact network. The virus is only spreading, the virus is spreading through a contact network. If you're in the same place, it's like there's a link between you. So the virus has a chance to use that link and pass between people. If you break that link and be that by staying at home, by wearing a mask, by keeping a distance, then you've broken the contact network. This is just the network's problem. And it should be easy, but yeah, people don't seem to be able to do it. And part of that comes back to the leadership conversation that I was mentioning here. Nobody trusts them anymore. We don't trust the people that are leading us. Mm. with good reason, without going too much down this road.
but the fact
that there is no trust just is a fact. Yeah. People don't really trust the people in charge, and it's a part of the problem of why we're not able to tackle these collective problems, which they're global problems now. Something that happens in one part of the world is affecting people in the other part of the world, and we need to find a way to trust each other and work together.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah.
And I love that take, seeing it as a network problem. And, you know, when you do say it, it does make sense, right? Like, it's not about the individual actions, but how we collectively do it and our collective kind of response to these huge worldly issues, environmentalism and the global pandemic. So I love that take, and like I think that's definitely something that should be promoted more, and the network side of everything. It just goes to show again like how important the work is with learning about networks and neuroscience and everything that you've kind of shared with us today. Going into takeaways, you know, usually we ask, you know, if you could sum up what we generally talked about today, or if you could kind of leave the listeners with one piece of advice relating to what we talked about, what would you say?
Again, with the putting it about the go and try lots of things, find the things that you love, the things that take you places. I've been very, very fortunate, and the things that I love have taken me all over the world. They've kept a roof over my head. They even find these things that manage to tick all the boxes and keep you happy. And the future, I think, is a future without disciplines. They're starting to break down a lot, and we're just looking at big problems. And of course, computer science is at the center of this. We're witnessing another explosion of how central computer science is going to be, especially with the advent of AI and machine learning. There's a whole new era we're ushering in here. Learn coding, get familiar with programs and computers as soon as you can.
I want it, yes.
At the same time as you're learning your first language, one of them should be Latino, should be English, French, computer science.
Yeah.
You're not wrong.
Yes.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I felt like I had one more thing to say, and it's just gone completely out of my head. Oh, that's what I wanted to say. So build networks and lean on your networks. Find friends and mentors. That's another thing that's really helped me be where I am. Really solid mentors, people that you admire. You should surround yourself with these people so that they encourage you to be a better person, and they connect you with other people and other opportunities. Create a network and lean on it.
Yeah, 100%. You know, from your story earlier, meeting Sandra and Ed seemed to have huge network effects, let's say, on your trajectory through life. So we're glad that you've gone through that entire journey. And, you know, now you're starting a whole new journey here in Calgary, but remotely, let's say. You know, we're glad to have you part of the UCalgary community now, and excited for all the upcoming great work that you'll be doing. So,
I'm really, really excited to be joining the University of Calgary. It's really struck me as a university that it wants to make a difference in the world. It cares about the people that are part of its community. It cares about its city, and it steps up to the responsibility to look after everyone and create a better world, and I cannot wait to be a part of that. I love how there's so many different interdisciplinary programs. For example, the master's in health, it's not trying to bucket them into different disciplines, but saying here's one big problem we're trying to solve, and we're going to use ideas from all disciplines to solve it. And I'm excited to be contributing to that kind of thinking. I can't wait to build connections between different departments, especially the Hotchkiss Brain Institute and the Department of Computer Science, but not limited to, but especially these two. I'm really excited to create connections between them and continue work on network neuroscience and branch out as opportunities arise and hopefully contribute to the climate crisis we're all facing. And racial and gender equity are big issues for me. Social justice.
That's awesome. And I guess last piece of the podcast would be, if people do want to learn more about you or what we talked about today, where can they go?
I'm sure if you just put my name into Google, my website will probably come up. I have a personal GitHub website, and hopefully that's a top hit.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you'll be able to find me on the UCalgary website as well.
That's awesome. All right. Well, thank you again, Emma, for coming on the show. It was really awesome talking about networks.
Thank you. It's been great.
Thanks for tuning into What the Tech, a podcast powered by the Computer Science Department of UCalgary. If you enjoyed the show, subscribe on whatever platform you're listening on. Also, follow us on Instagram at UofC_CPSC. For more computer science content. If you have any questions or want to suggest future episode topics, you can also visit anchor.fm/whatthetech-ucalgary. There, you can leave us a voice message with your questions for a chance to get featured in future episodes. Thanks again for listening. Join us next week for another episode of What the Tech.